Okay, great. Thank you. I'm now going to hand over to Rita and Vivek for paper 1A.
Hello. So I'll present this agenda paper. So in this session, we are planning to discuss with you the stakeholders' feedback that we received that are related to the tagging of the primary financial statements. So today's objective is to discuss our findings for these feedbacks that we received from the stakeholders. In this session, we'll discuss first and third point that are related to the statement of financial position and the statement of changes in equity. The second point that is related to the tagging of per share data will be discussed later today. And for the fourth point about the missing elements for movements in working capital, as mentioned on slide 18 of agenda paper 1, we are proposing to create four new common practice elements. So in this session, we have three topics to discuss, and I'll pause after every topic to seek your inputs. So first topic for this session, profit or loss for the year in the statement of financial position. We received this issue from a stakeholder as to how to tag the amount of profit or loss for the year when it is presented as a separate line item in the statement of financial position. The stakeholder also noted that the existing element, that is profit or loss, cannot be used here because this existing element is a duration line item and it cannot validate the calculations in the statement of financial position where all the other line items are instant. We analyzed this issue of separate presentation of profit or loss for the year in the statement of financial position. During our analysis, we considered these three criteria listed here on this slide. Our view is that this presentation is not inconsistent with the IFRS standards. In our findings, we observed that there are less than 10% FPIs that presented it as a separate line item. But in our past common practice project, we identified that there were more than 10% of the preparers that presented it as a separate line item. So it meets our frequency criteria to add a common practice element here. And in terms of ease of use, we think that adding the new common practice element here would make calculations consistent and thereby making it easier for the investors to use the tagged data. Therefore, we have two proposals here. First, we are proposing to create these four new common practice elements, two line items for the statement of financial position and two corresponding member elements for the statement of changes in equity. And our second proposal is to add a calculation relationship between the two proposed line items and the existing line item retained earnings. So that brings us to our first question for this session, which is, do you agree with our proposal to add four new elements listed on slide 6? If not, what alternative solution would you suggest and why? So I'll now pause here for your inputs.
Peter.
Hello, yes. I wondered whether in some cases, if someone had other comprehensive income that was also flowing into retained earnings, whether the word profit in the middle of these elements might cause any confusion, and whether if, for example, it said just retained earnings for the financial reporting period, and retained earnings, yeah, similarly for all of them, in fact, whether that might avoid any potential confusion about profit versus OCI as a suggestion.
So in our analysis, we did not saw those companies reporting those as a commonly reporting practice. So, but yes, we'll try to see if we can remove this kind of conflict through this documentation label for this element.
Okay, thanks, Peter, for that suggestion. Anyone else have suggestions on this one? Okay, if you want to continue.
So, second topic of this session is about the opening balance adjustments in equity as at the date of initial application of new or amended IFRS standard. The issue is when an entity transitions to new or amended IFRS standard by adjusting the opening balance of equity as at the date of initial application of that new standard, how should it tag the opening balance of the equity before the adjustments, that is 110 in this example, and opening balance of equity after the adjustments, that is 115 in this example? So this was the query that we received. So for today's discussion, we will refer this transition approach as cumulative effect approach. So in IFRS standards, there are these three approaches to transition to the new or amended IFRS standard. When a new standard is issued, it requires an entity to use one or more of these approaches to transition to it. First approach is prospective approach, where the new IFRS standard is applied from the year of adoption onwards. Under this approach, comparative amounts are not restated and no adjustments are made to the opening balances. The second approach is retrospective approach, where the comparative amounts are restated as per the new or amended IFRS standard. And the third approach is cumulative effect approach, where the cumulative effect of the initial application of new standard is shown as an adjustment in the opening balance of the current reporting period. So as mentioned here, the IFRS taxonomy modeling works fine in the first two transition approaches. However, it does not work well in the cumulative effect approach. These are illustrated in the next slides. Here is the modeling that we have in the IFRS taxonomy to handle the retrospective approach of transition. IAS 1 requires an entity to present in the statement of changes in equity the effects of retrospective application and retrospective restatement recognized as per IAS 8. Accordingly, the IFRS taxonomy has an axis for retrospective application and retrospective restatement in the statement of changes in equity. And here is an illustration of the tagging using the existing taxonomy model where an entity used the retrospective approach. And in our view, the existing taxonomy model works fine in case of retrospective approach. Now we try to apply the same modeling to the cumulative effect approach. And we notice that the existing model does not work well with the for the cumulative effect approach. So what is the problem here? Under this existing modeling, both the highlighted amounts, that is 75 and 85, need to be tagged with the same element equity and with the same date, that is 31st of December 2018, which may not be valid in XBRL. Therefore, to solve this, the preparers created extensions to tag one of these two amounts to differentiate between these two. Our analysis highlighted that the use of existing axis may be incorrect from an accounting perspective because the meaning and use of the existing member elements that are currently stated and previously stated is not very clear where the cumulative effect approach is used, as illustrated in the previous slide. Furthermore, the existing elements have the reference of IAS 8, which provides the presentation and disclosure requirements only for the retrospective approach and not for the cumulative effect approach. So therefore, we propose to add a new axis to handle the cumulative effect approach of transition. The proposed modeling for the cumulative effect approach is aligned to the existing model for retrospective approach to make it easier to understand and use for preparers and investors. And as we discussed, since IFRS standards do not require the disclosure of these adjustments resulting from cumulative effect approach, we are proposing to create these new elements as common practice elements. And here is an illustration to see how the existing and proposed models would work where an entity used both retrospective approach and cumulative effect approach in its financial statements. And in our view, this proposed model works fine where the cumulative effect approach is used. So we also considered these two options, but rejected these two. Option one was use of different dates for two different opening balances of equity, that is before adjustments and after adjustments. The reason for our rejection is because use of the date of 1st January for the adjusted opening balance would indicate that it is the balance at the end of 1st January, which is not the case here. Also, we considered the use of existing excess with the addition of new line item or a member element for the adjusted opening balance of equity. We rejected this option for the reasons already mentioned on slide 14. In our proposal, there is an issue in the formula link base. So we have this formula in the formula link base, that is opening balance of equity plus total increase decrease in equity should equal to closing equity. This formula may not work using the proposed modeling for the cumulative effect approach. So we are currently reviewing whether any change can be made in the formula to resolve this issue, and we'll update the ITCG members after we complete our research. So now, second question to the ITCG members is, do you agree with our proposal to add a new excess for the transitioning adjustments arising under the cumulative effect approach? If not, what alternative solution would you suggest and why?
Thanks, Vivek. Donna, would you like to come in?
Yes, thanks. I just have a question. You mentioned it as being common reporting, but I wonder how you view that in relation to IAS 1, I think it's paragraph 106D, that requires a reconciliation of the components of equity. And if this is a change in equity, wouldn't it have to be provided as part of that reconciliation?
So we refer this IAS 8 and IAS 1 both, and we noted that IAS 8 deals only with full retrospective approach. That is where the comparative amount are restated as per the new standard. And it does not deal with this cumulative effect approach, where the adjustments are made only in the opening balance of current reporting period.
So, but IAS 1 requires you to roll equity, right? So wouldn't IAS 1 in effect require you to roll that? And that would have to be a component if it's a change of equity.
Yeah, it's Rachel here. Yes, that's correct. It would be required by that paragraph of IS1, but that paragraph of IS1 doesn't explicitly refer to these adjustments here. And as a result, it falls into our common practice. So although there is a link to that specific paragraph of IS1, that paragraph isn't specific enough for us to say that it's explicitly required by that standard. So it ends up falling into the way in which we look at common practice.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Ashok has noted that he agrees with the proposal. Do we have other people who would like to flag their agreement in the chat room or would like to speak? We've got a few people nodding agreement. That's very helpful. Thank you. Vivek, I have a question on page 19, talking about the formula not working. So could I just clarify, that's your intention, is to come back to us and let us know what your proposals are to resolve that. Is that the plan?
Yes.
And I can see John has noted that he would like to see that formula proposal. So yes, John, staff will bring that back. Right. Anything else from members on this question? Okay, Vivek, if you'd like to proceed.
Okay, yes. So last topic in this session is about member elements to identify specific IFRS standards. As a background, when new or amended IFRS standard requires adjustments in opening balance of equity, it generally do not require the specific disclosure of IFRS standard to which the adjustment relates to, except for IFRS 15. Therefore, the IFRS taxonomy does not have specific member elements for the adjustments due to application of different IFRS standards, except for IFRS 15. However, the IFRS taxonomy has a higher level element for adjustments due to changes in accounting policy required by IFRS standards. Now, the issue is We observed that entities commonly disclose the specific IFRS standard to which the adjustment relates to. And here are some examples. We observed that some of them use the higher level element and some create an extension element to tag such adjustment. Therefore, we considered adding member elements for every new IFRS standard and amendment to IFRS standard, which requires transitioning through retrospective approach or cumulative effect approach. However, we noted that it may create a large number of members, and maintaining those members would require additional maintenance resources. Therefore, on balance, we propose to add the member elements for all new IFRS standards and major IFRS amendments only. So as already mentioned, this disclosure is not required by the IFRS standards, so these proposed member elements would be assigned a reference type of common practice. And for the IFRS taxonomy, the default policy to add common practice elements is when we observe companies commonly disclose the information in their financial statements. However, our proposal to add common practice elements would be an exception to our default policy of adding common practice elements after observing any reporting practice. So it would be kind of anticipated common reporting practice instead of observed reporting practice. So here are our proposals. First, we propose to create member elements for all new IFRS standards and major IFRS amendments only. Secondly, these elements would be assigned a common practice reference, which would be an exception to our default policy. And the last proposal is to apply this approach prospectively. That is, we are proposing to add members only for those IFRS standards or major amendments that are effective on or after 1st of January 2020. So here is our final question for this session. Do you agree with our proposal to create common practice elements for new IFRS standards and major IFRS amendments only? If not, what would you suggest and why?
Suzanne, would you like to come in with your question, please?
Is my audio working this time?
Yes, it's working, no. Suzanne.
Okay. I think we just had a quick clarification question about when you would envision using the increase-decrease member versus the accounting standard member, how those might work together. Just to clarify, I think we wanted to just double check. We understood that.
So increase, decrease, yes.
And might you get kind of a multiplicity of tagging, possibly, if people still don't use the standard member?
So this question is like the proposal of common practice members and the proposal to add this increase, decrease member for cumulative effect approach. Is this correct? Yeah. So,
and maybe go back to like slide 15, 17, and sort of then envisioning how the accounting standard member, the new standards members might weave in with that.
So we are proposing to create.
Great.
Yes. So we are proposing to create these members under these two axes separately, under the total element increase, decrease due to changes in accounting policies required by IFRS standards. So for every new standard, we'll create two members under both the axes separately.
Dasuki, would you like to come in?
Okay. US GAAP taxonomy has accounting standard update, member tag. So this proposal is same as the US GAAP taxonomy, right?
Almost, yes. So I think in US GAAP taxonomy, they have members for every accounting standard update, and we are proposing to create member elements for only major IFRS amendments and all the IFRS standards. So this would be a small change.
Yes, I know. So you mean the existing standard element were not used in practice. So you mean the future standard, you make a member tag, right?
Correct, that is correct. So only for future members that are effective on or after 1st of January 2020.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Daisuke. Peter.
Just one very specific point. I noticed one of the examples given was when IS-29 first starts applying to an entity, which from memory is on hyperinflation. And whilst I think it's a good idea to do this prospectively in terms of amendments and new IFRSs from 1st Jan 2020 onwards, one exception that we might make to that would be for IS-29 to capture the sort of adjustment that we see in that example.
Okay, so we noticed very few companies that were reporting IS-29 adjustments, but yes, we can see like how the companies are reporting this. Yes, thank you.
Okay, Donna.
Yes, to clarify in terms of alignment with the US GAAP was one piece that someone just asked. The one difference we have is we have a separate dimension for the standards members, so they are not nested within the same dimension. The other question, I think it kind of goes back to what Suzanne was trying to say, is that I think you could get diversity in practice because of that. Some filers may use just the adjustment, the general, you know, adjustment, and some may use the specific member for that adjustment, I think is what she was trying to say. And that's one of the reasons we separated. There were
And therefore, of course, we really support that you are looking now into these issues with regard to adoption of new standards. Yeah.
So yes, we are working on this project, and I think we are planning to bring agenda in next month's meeting for the same topic, that we want to keep those elements that are relating to predecessor standard just for 1 or 2 years to ensure smooth transitioning.
Okay, thanks a lot. Yeah.
Okay, anyone else? And if you do have agreement with the question, if you can just on the chat, you could indicate your agreement. If you agree, just use the chat room. But we have another question from Anna.
Thank you. Just very briefly, what is the, at what stage will it be known whether indeed an amendment is considered a major standard? So when will we know whether this work is carried out on each amendment? So at what point a major an IFRS amendment will be classified as major?
So as of now, we are planning to yes, Rachel.
Sorry, Vivek. Go ahead if you are wanting to comment on that.
So we are planning to take all the amendments to our IT like IFRS taxonomy review panel just to get their views. If they considered that any amendment is a major amendment, that we are planning to create a member. So we'll, in effect, we'll go to IFRS taxonomy review panel to get their views if they consider any amendment as a major or not.
I agree with you that we will consult with the ITCG on this, but I suspect it's more about whether the amendment to the standard itself represents a major amendment. And I think we would probably know that earlier in the process as we go through the development of the standard. Obviously, it would be a judgment call as to whether we thought it was a major amendment or not. But I think it should be fairly obvious from the way in which the board is dealing with the standard at particular times, whether it's going to look like a major amendment or something that's relatively minor. So it'll be a matter of judgment and we will consult on it, but I think in most cases it should be fairly straightforward to determine.
And yes, just as a clarification, we are planning to discuss with IFRS taxonomy review panel, that is like internal board members and this staff.
Okay, many thanks.
Yes,
and
but
I agree with the proposal for the rest.
Thank you.
And on this and for this. Thank you.
Thanks, Anna. But as Rachel says, you know, because of the way we work on the board, it should be obvious, we're hoping, what are major amendments. So that's good. Suzanne, I note your comment there. Do you want to speak on that or just happy with your chat room comment?
Think it's that we just, I don't think we're saying we disagree. It's just, you know, kind of, again, going back to Donna's point as well. I think that was our one residual concern.
Okay, good. Anybody else wish to speak on this topic? Okay, so we're scheduled for a break. We're running a bit early, but we'll still stay on our agenda timings because I think that helps people who are dialing in and dialing out. So we're all going to take a break now and we're going to reconvene at 12:35 UK time. So following through your agenda, we've finished item A, item 1A. We're taking a break and we'll all be back on our screens at 12:35 to move on to paper 1B. So that's 12:35 UK time. So thanks, everybody. Enjoy your break and I'll see you in a while.
Thank you.
Thank you.